Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're taking on a, well, a massive topic, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. For so many of us, the history can feel inaccessible.
Yeah.
It's constantly being overwritten by current headlines, and the political rhetoric makes it feel, I don't know, just overwhelming.
It does feel vast. And that's really the problem. The constant noise often obscures the origins of the conflict, making it seem like some purely ancient struggle or a theological war.
Right.
But our mission here, using Martin Button's careful analysis, is to acquire the necessary historical tools.
Okay.
We need to move beyond those simplistic ideas of, you know, right versus wrong and truly understand why this modern political struggle became so enduring and so tragic.
Absolutely. And this isn't a quick news summary. This is a chance for you, the listener, to step back and really look at the blueprints of history. We're relying on a deep dive into the work of Martin Button, a historian who offers a scholarly, nonpartisan lens that really cuts through the noise.
Bunton is an ideal guide for this journey, I think, precisely because he is a historian, not an advocate.
Right.
He's a distinguished professor of history, specializing in Middle Eastern studies at the University of Victoria.
And what sets his scholarship apart is, I think, the methodological rigor. In an area where sources are so deeply politicized.
Oh, deeply.
Button manages to access primary sources from multiple and often conflicting perspectives.
That's because he's done the meticulous work. He's been in the Ottoman and the British colonial archives, and he's fluent in Arabic, Hebrew, and Turkish.
And that fluency is a game changer.
It is. It allows him to examine the motivations, the aspirations of both the Palestinian and Israeli experiences with genuine rigor. He wants you to understand how the situation was constructed, brick by historical brick, without ever taking sides.
That distinction is just crucial. Okay, so let's unpack his central premise right out of the gate.
What?
Button argues that the conflict is not an ancient or inherently religious war rooted in timeless hatred. That's the common misconception, right?
That's the one we see in the media all the time. Instead, he presents it as a modern political collision between two competing nationalisms over the exact same piece of physical territory.
A critical reframing.
It is. He demonstrates that the conflict is fundamentally a product of the late 19th and 20th centuries.
So recent history, relatively speaking.
Yes, very. It was spurred by two simultaneous powerful developments. The slow collapse of the Ottoman Empire, which had governed the region for 400 years,
right,
and the rise of two distinct modern political movements, Jewish Zionism seeking a homeland and Palestinian Arab nationalism seeking self-determination.
So the tragedy, as Button frames it, is that both of these narratives contain, well, legitimate historical grievances and aspirations.
They do.
But they became fundamentally irreconcilable. Their aims were mutually exclusive because they were competing for the same small piece of land. It just wasn't big enough for both.
Exactly. Not big enough to satisfy the maximum political dreams of both peoples. The book's core purpose is just to meticulously explain the chronology, showing that the current situation wasn't inevitable. It was built incrementally through historical decisions, starting long before 1948.
Okay, so let's start there. Let's go to the late Ottoman period, roughly 1850 to World War I. Button shows us that initially both Arab and Jewish communities were responding to similar modernizing pressures.
Right, the whole empire was declining, so they were building schools, banks, political organizations.
And his communities due to modernize.
Yes, and he coins a great phrase for this, competitive modernization.
Competitive modernization.
As the old political structures weakened, both groups developed these parallel institutions that began to exist side by side. But these systems were, well, destined to become rivals because they clashed over fundamental practical issues.
Land and labor.
Land and labor.
Can you give us a concrete example of that rivalry? I mean, what made the modernization competitive instead of, say, cooperative?
The best example is probably land acquisition and labor practices. The Zionist movement, as it purchased land for agricultural settlements, often followed a policy of Hebrew labor.
Okay.
So this meant that as land was transferred, the Palestinian Arab tenants who had traditionally worked that land, they were displaced.
They were just out of a job.
And explicitly excluded from working for the new Jewish settlements. So this wasn't just high politics. This was about daily economic displacement.
I see.
These disputes over whose labor was permitted where and who could buy what land, they really laid the groundwork for the future political crisis.
That makes the rivalry so tangible. And
yeah.
This burgeoning competition then gets thrown into total overdrive by World War I and the British Mandate.
Yes, from 1920 to 1948, This is the pivotal section where Britain essentially sets the whole institutional framework for the conflict.
How?
Well, they did this by making a series of contradictory promises, all driven by wartime necessity and, frankly, imperial ambition.
Right. First, you have the Hussein McMahon correspondence.
Vaguely promising Arab independence in exchange for supporting the war against the Ottomans.
Then second, the secret Sykes-Picot Agreement.
Which divided the Middle East into British and French spheres of influence.
And then, the most famous one, the 1917 Balfour Declaration.
Which promised support for the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people.
So Britain essentially promised the same land to three different parties or purposes.
It was an impossible arrangement. And Bunton argues that British policy during the Mandate years, it inadvertently institutionalized the conflict.
How so?
By managing immigration and regulating land sales, they created a system that entrenched communal division, not coexistence. The tension just kept escalating, culminating in the 1936-1939 Arab Revolt, which was a clear rejection of British rule and increased Zionist immigration.
And that leads us directly to the cataclysmic years, 1948 and 1967.
Mm.
The 1948 Arab-Israeli War is, well, it's truly the unresolved heart of the entire conflict.
It is. And Bunton really emphasizes the dual nature of this single event. For Israelis, it was the War of Independence, the realization of statehood. But for Palestinians, it was the Nakba, the catastrophe.
Resulting in the displacement and expulsion of over 700,000 refugees.
So that one event created this fundamental, enduring, and mutually exclusive outcome.
Statehood for one people.
And permanent statelessness and a refugee crisis for the other. The conflict was no longer just about geography. It became about demographics and this desperate need for return.
And then, just 19 years later, the conflict shifts again, fundamentally, with the 1967 Six-Day War.
This was the single most transformative event since 48. It completely changed the nature of the fight.
Wow.
It shifted from a dispute over Israel's pre-1967 existence to one focused on the military occupation of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem.
And that occupation established the framework for all future diplomacy.
Right. The war led to UN Resolution 242.
The famous Land for Peace formula.
Trading territory captured in 67 for recognized borders. But, and this is key, at the exact same time, it gave immediate rise to the Israeli settlement enterprise in those newly captured territories.
Which physically acts in direct opposition to the Land for Peace idea.
Exactly. The settlement expansion has been the enduring dilemma. It transforms a political dispute into a geographic reality on the ground, making the eventual division of land incredibly difficult.
Okay, so moving into the 70s and 80s, after the Arab states failed to defeat Israel militarily, we see the rise of the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO.
Yes, under Yasser Arafat, and they successfully maneuvered to become the independent political voice of the Palestinian cause.
And that political maneuvering leads to the first Intifada in 1987.
A grassroots uprising against the occupation, driven by spontaneous civil disobedience and direct confrontation. It dramatically highlighted the human cost of military rule, both inside Israel and internationally.
And that set the stage for diplomacy.
It did.
Which brings us to the moment of perhaps the greatest hope, the Oslo Accords of 1993.
The mutual recognition between Israel and the PLO.
It was supposed to be an incremental approach leading to a final peace treaty. So if they finally recognize each other, why did the process ultimately fail? I mean, was the gap really that wide?
Bunton's very clear on this. The process failed because it relied heavily on what he calls constructive ambiguity.
Constructive ambiguity? What does that mean?
It means the negotiators deliberately postponed or vaguely worded all the crucial, difficult final status issues.
Like Jerusalem, the refugees.
The final borders, the settlements. They assumed that once trust built up, those issues would be easier to resolve later.
And that trust never materialized.
It didn't. The process was ultimately undermined by what Bunton calls spoilers.
Extremists on both sides.
Yes. The assassination of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin by a Jewish extremist, coupled with devastating suicide bombings by Hamas.
It just succeeded in eroding all the public confidence.
All of it, leading to the violence of the Second Intifada and, well, the stalemate we see today.
So, after this deep dive into the history, what are the core enduring takeaways we should carry forward from Bunton's analysis?
Okay, I think the first key takeaway is recognizing the power of competing narratives and historical memory.
Right.
We see this dynamic in every polarized society, you know?
Yeah.
Groups select and emphasize different past events, like 1948 being either independence or Nakba, to justify their present actions and identity. Button forces you to acknowledge both interpretations.
And that ties directly into theme number two, the absolute centrality of land and territory.
Hmm.
Despite all the religious and ideological wrapping, Button shows the conflict has always been a fundamental territorial dispute over physical space.
It's always been about who gets to own the deed, tracing all the way back through every system, Ottoman, British, and modern Israeli.
And my third key takeaway is the profound impact of asymmetry of power and external intervention.
Yes. The power imbalance between a highly organized state and a largely stateless population has shaped every single outcome.
And this teaches us that international powers, whether it's 20th century Britain or major contemporary powers, often pursue their own geopolitical interests, sometimes worsening the conflict under the guise of imposing peace.
This point is so critical for thinking. When you see international aid or intervention, you should always be asking, whose interests are truly being served?
Button's synthesis is just. It's really powerful. Let's look at a few core ideas that capture his objective approach and what you should take away.
Okay. The first one, I think, beautifully summarizes his position. The tragedy of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict lies not in one side being right and the other wrong,
but in both being right from their own perspectives while being unable to acknowledge the legitimacy of the other's claims.
Yes. It's a tragedy of colliding rights, not a battle between good and evil.
That is such an important distinction. And focusing on the failure of diplomacy, he observes this. Every peace process has failed, not because negotiators lacked goodwill,
but because they could not bridge the gap between what each side needed to accept a settlement and what their societies were prepared to concede.
That tells us that peace is a social contract, not just a diplomatic handshake.
Exactly. It means leaders might be ready for a deal, but if the people back home haven't undergone the necessary psychological and social preparation for compromise, the deal will fail.
And finally, he offers this really poignant critique of the occupation's internal cost.
The occupation's greatest tragedy is not just what it has done to Palestinians, but how it has corrupted Israeli democracy and society in ways that may prove irreversible.
Wow.
That just underscores the corrosive effect of maintaining military rule over another people. It creates powerful security establishments, political incentives that undermine democratic norms, a phenomenon we see globally, really.
So what does this all mean for you? How can you apply this historical understanding in your daily life?
I think application number one is informed media consumption. You can now use Bunton's framework to deconstruct propaganda. When a news report describes violence without historical context, you recognize that absence.
Right. And when you hear these highly charged political terms like settlements or refugees,
you now understand their origin, their legal status under the mandate, and why they carry such emotional weight. You have the historical ballast to resist those simplistic narratives.
And application two, fostering nuanced dialogue. The book offers a blueprint for discussing contentious political issues by focusing on historical context, not emotional judgment.
Right. You can introduce facts about the competing mandate promises or the function of UN Resolution 242 to elevate conversations that might otherwise just dissolve into angry accusations.
And finally, application three, which is universal, understanding security versus democracy.
Yes. The analysis of how decades of perceived security threats can gradually erode democratic institutions and civil liberties.
Well, that's applicable everywhere. It lets you critically evaluate counterterrorism policies and the balance of power in your own country, using the Middle East as a powerful high-stakes case study.
It provides a sophisticated toolkit for engaging with complexity rather than just retreating from it.
I think the most valuable lesson we can derive from Button is that understanding these complex conflicts requires moving beyond moral certitude.
Yes, to grasp the profound complexity of the situation. A true tragedy born of two legitimate yet mutually exclusive national dreams colliding on one small piece of land. Recognizing this complexity is the essential first step toward any possible future change.
And my final takeaway is the power of historical contingency. Button really proves that this situation wasn't inevitable.
Mm.
Different decisions by external powers like the British or by leaders on both sides in the 1990s could have steered history elsewhere. And that insight is powerful because it encourages deeper analysis instead of fatalism.
Mm-hmm.
The past created the present, and future choices can, at least theoretically, change the trajectory.
It remains a history lesson that is profoundly relevant today.
See you next time. with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.